I have to admit, in the preparation for this morning's message, it's been a crazy week at home. As you can tell here, we're going to learn about contentment. And this week in the Chamberlain house, Rachel had jaw surgery, and Rachel runs our home. I go out and work, and she runs home life, and she takes care of things there. But this week, I was playing Mr. Mom, and I was trying to keep up with all those kind of things and doing all this while I'm trying to write a message on contentment. Okay, it was not an easy week to do that. I think that was God's sense of humor and all of that, but Friday night, I still had nothing wrote down. I had read all kinds of stuff, been reading and preparing, but nothing actually, like, no outline. And I was really getting frustrated, and I had said, Dylan says to me, he says, Dad, he says, how's your message coming along? And I said, I haven't even started. I said, I don't really know how to start it. And Dylan says, well, I would probably start with good morning. So he may be my sermon writer here moving forward. He's pretty good. But so anyway, we got it all put together, so hopefully we can bring something to you here this morning, but that's where we started at. So if you remember, the reason we are where we are this morning, I spoke about a month ago on Philippians 3, and we went over discipleship. And at that time, I thought, well, if this is only a month later, I might as well take it easy on myself, and I'll just do the next chapter. And so as I started reading through that, I realized that speaking for me, speaking about contentment is not easy at all. And it turns out that's a very hard subject, but we're going to learn about Philippians 4 this morning, and we're going to see if we can try to pull something out of that to apply to our daily lives today. So now, before we get into our study here this morning, though, I want to set the stage for this idea of contentment by wrapping our mind around the word contentment, okay? So this often implies this context of the American brain and the way that we think of things. That's kind of how we view words, is the way that we've learned them. So as I mentioned, the real struggle with this idea or this emotion or state of being or whatever you want to say that contentment is, whatever you view it as, it often has several different meanings. And oftentimes, contentment can kind of have contrasting thoughts. And it can be good and it can be bad. And I'll kind of explain what I mean by that. So sometimes, when you hear the word contentment, when someone has contentment, you think about the guy that's living down by the river, right? He's got a small cabin, he fishes every day, no one's there to bother him, he's growing his own food, he's living off the land, he is content, right? And that's what we think of, and that sounds amazing, and that sounds peaceful, and that sounds serene, and you're like, yes, contentment is a great thing for people to have. But then sometimes, when we hear the word contentment, it's not so good. You hear, oh, well, is he going to apply for that promotion at work? You know, doesn't he want to seem to get a little bit better? And then you'll hear, oh, well, he's kind of content where he's at. It's almost as if they're saying, well, he's not really willing to try, so he's just going to settle in the position that he's in. And in that way, contentment almost sounds like it's a negative thing. You don't want to have contentment. You also hear it a lot if you're into sports and athletics and into that kind of realm. You'll hear people talk about, you know, they could run faster, they could swim further, they could lift more, you know, they could do all these things. But then you might hear one of the announcers say, well, they're content with where they're at right now. They're content in their abilities within their athletic events. And that kind of comes along with that same meaning of, you know, they're content, so they're just going to give up, right? They're not going to try to do better. They're not going to try to excel anymore. They're kind of content. And sometimes when you hear that word, then people get this feeling of contentment is, okay, I give up. I'm not going to try anymore, so I'm going to be content with where I'm at. And so you kind of hear that different kind of thing, and maybe I'm just average. Maybe I'm not good enough to do more than that. So that's kind of another way that we hear about contentment. So I looked up what Wikipedia has to say about contentment. We know Wikipedia's got all kinds of definitions on there. But I found this definition on Wikipedia. It says, contentment is a state of being in which one is satisfied with their current situation and the state of affairs in one's life as they presently are. If one is content, they are pleased with their situation and how the elements in one's life are situated. Well, now, I read that definition and I thought, I am never pleased with how the elements in my life are going. So that can't be a very good definition of contentment. I'm always frustrated. I'm always wanting more. I'm always striving. so I'm thinking, that doesn't seem like that works. So contentment seems to be all over the map in the eyes of man and what man says that contentment is. However, if we are going to try to live out Christian contentment in this modern world, we need to have some biblical context to see which, if any of these ideas of contentment is correct. So, a little bit of historical context when we get into this passage this morning. When I read something, I like to know where it fits in a time frame. You know, what the general feel of the day was. What does this passage, you know, what was going on? Why was it wrote? What does it mean? So when we do that, we learned about a month ago that if we're studying in Philippians, we're thinking about the fact that Paul started the church in Philippi, and this church is growing, and they're encountering different problems and challenges and questions as they're going along, and they're trying to learn how to handle these things as a church. And a lot of that is addressed in the book of Philippians that we have in our Bibles. But we know that this book of Philippians, it's actually a letter, right? It's actually a response that Paul wrote to the church while sitting in a Roman prison cell. Okay, now, in the days of Paul, a prison sentence wasn't exactly a weekend at the Hampton Inn. Okay, it was a little bit rougher than that. The church of Philippi then decides that they're going to send Paul a care package to help care for him while he's in prison there. So Epaphroditus delivers this package to Paul. Epaphroditus gets really sick while he's there, while Paul's writing this letter. Epaphroditus recovers, and then he brings this letter that Paul wrote back to the church of Philippi, okay? So this morning, we're going to study that end of that letter. We're going to study what Paul had to say to the church of Philippi there near the end. So now, anyone that knows Paul, you've all been in church quite a while. We kind of know Paul. We know his background. This guy has been through a thing or two, right? He's a rough and tumble kind of guy. And I'm not saying he's a glutton for punishment, okay? That would be more my son Logan. He just signs up for the hard stuff, okay? Paul would actually try to avoid those things. Logan doesn't even try to avoid them. But Paul would try to avoid bad things. He would try to avoid persecution. But if persecution came as a result of his faith, Paul would handle it. He'd be there hands-on. And that's kind of what Paul was like. So as he faced these consequences, he was often involved in beatings and stonings and jail time. And Paul, he faced some terrible persecutions for his faith, but he endured through those things. And in fact, we're going to learn this morning, not only did he endure the persecutions, he actually had contentment in the midst of those trials, in the midst of those things that he was put through. And that's really what we want to hone in for our lives here this morning. So when we look at our culture, and not only our culture, but myself, to be honest, I have been laughed at for my faith. There's been many people that make fun of me for the things that I believe, and I have been mocked for my faith, but I have never been beaten for my faith, okay? I've never been jailed for my faith yet. I have never lost property over my faith, okay? I've never had family members killed on behalf of my faith, but others around the world, we've seen in that video there this morning, others around the world face a lot of problems and a lot of persecution, a lot of anxiety around their faith. But we here in America, we really have it pretty good. Honestly, we have it so good here that we don't even do uncomfortable well, okay? If the air conditioner stopped working in the summertime, some of you don't show up, okay? That's pretty mild compared to the persecution the world's facing out there. Okay, so we're not dealing with the things that they did in other areas. So then you have Paul, right? He's writing this letter in the midst of persecution and suffering to the people of Philippi. And mind you, Paul was in Philippi before. And when he was there, he was beaten, he was arrested, he was thrown in jail. And he is writing this letter to people that know this, right? These people, they know what he went through when he was there. And we know this. And so it's possible to have contentment in that situation. After you've gone through those things, it is possible for us to have contentment in our situations, whatever they may be. So this kind of is the backdrop, the situation that we find Paul in this morning. So anyway, finally getting into Philippians chapter 4. Follow with me on starting at verse 4. It says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. Let your moderation be known unto all men. The Lord is at hand. Be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Well, first of all, zone in on the emphasis Paul is using. He says, rejoice in the Lord when? Rejoice in the Lord always, right? He says, always. Then, as if you didn't get it, he goes on to repeat himself. He says, and again I say, rejoice. It's as if Paul is saying, I don't want you to miss this rejoicing part. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Okay, he wants us to get this. Now, that's a pretty bold statement, though, for a guy that's sitting in a Roman prison cell. That's pretty hard to rejoice in the Lord. Well, contrast this message with us, okay? Do we rejoice in the Lord? Not so much, right? What do we rejoice in? We rejoice in our health. We rejoice in our wealth. We rejoice in our freedom. And when we have those things, we rejoice in them, right? But all those things are great, and I'm glad when I have any or all of those things that I've mentioned. But Paul says, don't rejoice in them. Paul says, rejoice in the Lord. And that is important here, you see, because what happens is the things that we find ourselves rejoicing in our lives, we find ourselves relying on those things. That's what happens here. The problem is that whatever we find ourselves relying on other than the Lord, those things are fragile. Those things are weak. Those things can be lost. They can be removed. They can be taken away at any given moment. So we don't want to rely on those things. Relying on your health, for instance. When you have it, it's great. But we've all experienced enough life to know that at any given minute, you may not have that. A doctor's call may change how you feel about your health in a moment, right? And relying on your wealth, that is nice. It sure is nice to have a little surplus, okay? Let's be honest. It makes life go a little bit easier, okay? When we have a little bit extra, the things that we worry about aren't quite as deep as when we're in the bottom, right? So each of us have experienced different levels of our own mountaintops and valleys when it comes to wealth. We've all had moments in our lives where we've had a little extra, and we've all had moments where we had a little less. Okay, so wealth is so volatile, trying to rely on that is not a good way to live your life. Well, our freedom. Now listen, I think it's great. I love our country, and I love the freedom that we have here, and it's amazing. But we aren't guaranteed this freedom, right? They always say we're one generation away from losing our freedom, and I think we're like right at the edge of that generation, okay? So looking at the state of our country right now, I don't know how stable freedom can be, right? So I say all that to say rejoice in the Lord, right? That's what they're saying here. Find joy in the Lord. Don't try to find joy in all these external things that won't last. Any of those things can be taken away in a moment. You know, if your joy is found in the Lord, no one can take that from you. No matter what this world throws at you, they can take your health, they can take your wealth, they can take your freedom, they can take all the things that you enjoy, but they cannot take the joy of Christ that is in your heart. That isn't up for grabs. It is not, no one can get that. And when you start with that mindset, right? When Paul starts out with that mindset, the rest of what we're going to study this morning falls into place. But we have to start by rejoicing in the Lord, meaning relying on the Lord first. That's where we want to start at this morning. So verse 5, remember it says, let your moderation be known unto all men, the Lord is at hand. Well, that word moderation, when you study it in other translations, they use words like gentleness and reasonableness. So what they're kind of saying is let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Well, this is pretty obvious, and you know, if you're reasonable to your fellow man, and remember now this letter of that Paul wrote to the church of Philippi, this is to believers in a church. So he's saying, you know, don't go from one extreme to another when you're dealing with people that you know here. Be reasonable in your dealings with one another. Be reasonable in your communication with one another. Get that reputation for being a reasonable, level-headed person. Okay, we have all encountered that person that's unreasonable. Right? We've encountered that person. We all have someone in mind that's unreasonable. You know, it has to be done their way. Things have to be the way they want them. They will fight you over everything just for the joy of fighting you, okay? They must win every battle. But do they really win when you break it down? What does that kind of lifestyle do for the reputation? Is it really worth it, right? And so that's where Paul is saying, be reasonable, right? Be reasonable people. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. Well, we as Americans, we are really quick to let our opinions be known to everyone. We're really quick to let our outrage be known to everyone. But are we really quick to let our reasonableness be known to everyone? And that's what we really have to kind of think about this morning. So in verse 6, it says, be careful for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. So remember now, we are rejoicing in the Lord. We are letting our reasonableness be known to everyone. And here in this verse, other translations say, do not be anxious about anything, right? Do not let yourself get all stirred up about things that you can't change. So we think about that. So what does this give us, right? If we can do these things, what does this give us? Well, it gives us what we find in verse 7, where it says, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Well, we want that, right? We want the peace of God that guards our hearts. But how do we get it, right? We rejoice with him. We rely on him. We are reasonable, stable people. We are not anxious because we trust in him. We put our faith in him. That is what it takes to get this peace of God, right? This is what it takes to get that peace of God that passes all understanding. You see, we as Americans, we want the peace of God, but we don't want to go through the process to get there, right? We want things immediately. God, just give me your peace right now. But we don't want to go through the process of finding the peace of God in our lives. Verse 8, it says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. That word, that phrase, think on these things. Contentment is a result of aligning our hearts with the things of God. So contentment is about understanding the will of God. Well, it's been about a year or so, if you remember before, I had spoke about guarding your heart, remember? Guarding your heart and guarding your mind and the things that you allow in there. And the Bible repeats this idea over and over and over. The idea of protecting the heart, protecting the mind. And I'm telling you, this is a huge concept in the Bible. And you may say, Eric, well, I'm here, ain't I? I mean, I'm guarding my heart right now. I'm sitting in church. Well, that's good. But what goes into your mind on Monday? What goes into your mind on Tuesday? What goes into your mind on Wednesday? Are the things that's going into your mind on these days, are those things true and honest and just and pure and lovely and of good report? Are these the things that you are thinking on? Are these the things that are in there? Because when you don't do that, then who is shaping your mind? Who is shaping your thoughts? Is it cable news? Talk radio? Your coworkers? These thoughts are robbing you of contentment if you don't protect what you're putting into your mind. And so you have to be really mindful of that. We spend so much time being worried about and therefore anxious and afraid about things that might not even happen, but we get all worked up about it because of the things that we're putting into our minds. And we worry about who's going to win an election this year, right? Who really cares? God has a plan here. The anxiousness that we put into our minds is not worth the trials that we put into our lives over worrying about these things. We are not centering our thoughts on the things that are true and honest and just and pure and lovely and of good report. Those are the things that we need to be putting in there. That's not to say that we shouldn't care and have strong convictions about things and be involved in our world, but we also have to make sure we be careful about what we allow to impact our thoughts and impact the way we see the world and impact the way we view our relationship with other Christians and with God. So we have to align our thoughts here, right? So we have to align our thoughts with what the gospel would want us to do. So if you're setting the stage, if you are setting the stage to live a life of contentment, well, what do you allow in there then? Well, you have to be intentional about what you allow in there. So that's kind of what we're thinking about this morning. So verse 9, it goes on and says, those things, so the things that we've learned about, the things that we're putting in there, those things which ye have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do. And the God of peace shall be with you. Well, that word do there is a small word, but that's the main word in this passage. That implies action, right? So you have to do something. Paul says he has to practice what he preaches. You have to live it out, right? You have to put legs to what you're talking about here. You have to do. You have to have action. You can learn and you can receive and you can hear about all of this stuff, but that doesn't cut it if you don't put action to these things. If you don't truly want the experience, the peace of God in your life that Paul is talking about here, you have to have action. You have to do the things that we learned about in the prior verses. So now that we have this mindset, right, that Paul is moving on to kind of a different area. We've kind of got our idea around what we're talking about here. Now within the text, he's moving to a different area of the letter. And Paul is about to thank the church for sending him this care package that we had talked about, right? That's where we find ourselves in verse 10, where it says, but I rejoice in the Lord greatly that now at last your care of me hath flourished again, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. So while I was preparing for this message, I read a really long section of an old commentary that I have that went into great detail on how to say thank you when you are presented with a gift like this, okay? And it went on to talk about the way that when you receive a gift, it can be kind of tricky because the way you say thank you can impact the giver, right? If you say thank you in the wrong way, it can kind of send the wrong message, and maybe you're not really thankful, maybe you're greedy. And so being thankful for something, you kind of have to tiptoe around the way you're thankful for things. And that was kind of a passage that I had read there. And you see, Paul can certainly use the support, right? He's sitting in prison. He could use some things sitting in prison, but he doesn't want to get his heart in the wrong place. And that's what he does here. So notice the way in which verse 10 plays out, right? So the first half, it says, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care of me hath flourished again, right? So he's saying, you know, I'm very happy. I'm very thankful that you brought that care back to me. I'm very thankful that you thought about me again. I'm very thankful that you did this. But then Paul kind of says, you know, it's been a while since you sent me anything. You sent me any provision. But notice he doesn't labor on this idea that, you know, that it's been a while. He pivots almost immediately in the second half of the verse and gives the church of Philippi an out, basically. He gives them an out for not sending something sooner. The second half where it says, wherein ye were also careful, but ye lacked opportunity. Okay, he's saying, notice how humble that is. He says, you know, you were going to do it, but I know you lacked opportunity. You were kind of busy. You had a lot going on, right? This is Paul displaying that reasonableness that we had talked about. Paul is saying, you know, I could use the support. I'm sitting in prison, but I know you guys have been busy. You've had your own stuff going on. He doesn't want to have this entitled mentality with this gift because that kind of changes the heart of the gift. When you start to think about that, that kind of leads into this idea of contentment that we're building up to. So that moves us on to verse 11 where it says, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am in, therewith to be content. Well, now this is a very famous passage, right? We've all heard this passage many times. The key word in this passage is the word learned, right? We have learned to be content. And learning contentment is the challenge. See, most of you probably know by now that Rachel and I homeschool our kids. And we teach them in our school, pronouns are left in English class. They don't belong in health class. Okay, but in our time educating our children, What an amazing process it is to watch someone learn something, okay? And I've got to be honest, Rachel does most of the teaching in our house. I'm usually out at work and different things, but she does most of the work. But sometimes when there's a roadblock, there's an issue with one of the kids and they can't seem to get something, we've got this big dry erase board, and I'll get up there and I'll start working through a math problem all these different ways and bringing it in for them so that they can finally get it. And when you see that, when they get it, right, when you see a child learn, they'll get this flicker in their eye. And you're like, I'm done. They got it. We're good now, right? As soon as they get it, they've got it. And then at that point, they're an expert, and they don't want you to speak anymore, okay? but kind of like adults. But you can also, that's one way to learn, right? That's kind of the academic way of learning. But you can also learn things through life experience, right? You can learn, in fact, when you dig into this word in the old Greek, learning has this connotation of gaining experience or this idea of something, doing something long enough that it becomes habitual. That's what the word, the old Greek word meant here. So with that understanding of doing something long enough to be habitual, once you gain experience and once you repeat that process, right, enough times, so you do something and you repeat that lifestyle enough times, you implement that in your lives, at that point you have learned it. Okay, that's what that word means there. So, you see, the problem is in our lives, though, that in our brains, we want to implement this in our lives, but we don't want to go through the learning process, right? Learning takes patience. Learning takes diligence. Learning takes practice, you know. I would love to say that I run marathons, right? I'd love to stand here and say Eric runs marathons, but the problem is that I don't want to train to run a marathon, okay? I don't want to go through the physical process in my body to do that. I lose my breath just thinking about having to do that, okay? But we as Christians, that's what we do in our spiritual lives. We want spiritual maturity, right? But we don't want to learn spiritual maturity. We don't want to go through the process of learning spiritual maturity. We want to be more like Christ, but we don't want to learn to be more like Christ, right? You see where I'm going here with this? We want contentment, but we don't want to learn contentment. Contentment is a hard thing to learn. So Paul says, I want you to learn contentment. So Paul says, I have learned in whatever state that I find myself in, I have learned to be content. Well, how did he do this, right? How did he actually do this? Well, this is where the learning comes in. Paul tells us in verse 12, and what I did here, when I read my Bible, I use several translations before I read verse 12, and I love the King James Bible because it's kind of the hard nuts and bolts, right? And then I can use it to cross-reference into the Greek and the Hebrew, and then I can determine what the initial meaning of the word was and all those things. However, I also love to read the ESV Bible, right? For me, when I read, it kind of flows through my brain a little bit easier. And so I want to read verse 12 out of the ESV Bible. So verse 12 says, if you're following along and it gets confusing, that's why. It says, I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. And as like I said, I was reading through different ways to try to get all of this in my brain, and I thought, what does that word secret mean there? I have learned the secret of facing plenty. What on earth does that mean, the secret of facing plenty? There is no secret to facing plenty, right? Plenty is easy, right? Having extra is easy. Wealth is easy. Give me lots of stuff and lots of possessions. That's easy. Abundance is easy, right? Well, the secret has to be in finding contentment when we have nothing, right? Shouldn't it be content? Shouldn't it be the work should be in trying to do it with nothing? Well, the only problem here is it clearly says that the secret to contentment is facing, the secret is learning how to face plenty. And when you think about that, you know, see, this is where we get it wrong as Americans. See, when we have plenty, we basically tell God, God, I'm good right now. I got all this stuff. I don't really need you right now. Right? That's what we do. And then when we lose those things, we say, God, where are you at? I need a little bit more stuff, right? And that's where we have this issue with contentment. So the secret truly is in having plenty. So we trick ourselves into believing that there is no secret to having plenty. The reality is, and I know this can be a little bit touchy with everyone because, you know, we all come from different places. And at any given moment, you know, we have to be honest, you know, we all have a lot, right? Throughout American history, throughout world history, there's been a lot of suffering. There's been a lot of people without. But at any given moment, everyone in this room would be considered to have plenty, right? That's what I'm saying here. So we all have nice clothes on. We all got here by driving a car here this morning. We got up and got dressed in our nice warm homes. We don't worry about where lunch is going to come from, right? So in the context of human history, we have plenty. So if we have plenty, we honestly have an abundance. But yet in that moment, we are still not content. We're not content with the things that we have. We are scared that those things that we have are going to be taken away, right? So even though we have plenty, even though we have abundance, we all sit around anxious that we're going to lose the things that we do have. And we're scared. So what do we do? What do we do to compensate about not having contentment because we don't think that we have enough? Well, we just go get a little bit more, right? If I go get just a little bit more, if I had just a little bit more money in the bank, then I would be content, right? If I lost just a little bit more weight, then I would be content, right? If I had just a little bit more in my retirement account, then I would be content, right? But the problem is those things are not a good security net. Because we talked about when we want more of those things, we find ourselves relying on those things. That is not what we want to find ourselves relying on, because you can't find contentment in those things. The issue is you can't learn contentment and plenty when times are good because you don't want to rely on God and acknowledge that those things didn't come from you. And if you can't do that, you'll never be content when you have nothing. If you can't rely on God with plenty, you will not be able to rely on God when you have nothing. And that's what Paul, that's really the idea of contentment here. Paul says, I have learned the secret of contentment in having plenty, in want, in abundance, and in hunger. You may be saying, okay, Eric, I've got it. You know, I know what you're saying here. Just give me the secret already, right? What is the secret to contentment? Well, Paul already gave us the secret. I have actually already covered it. Paul says that we've been sharing the secret all along. Paul says, this is what my whole ministry is about, is telling you the secret of contentment. The secret is found in what we already studied in verse 4. We have to rejoice in the Lord. Remember, we're relying on the Lord. That's what he says. We're going to have a reasonableness. If we are rejoicing in the Lord, we are reasonable people. We are not anxious people. We are not worried about the things that we can't change. If you can do all of those things, right? Remember those words, to be true and honest and just and pure. The things that we're putting into our lives, if we're putting in the right things and we're thinking upon the right things, contentment is the byproduct of doing that. Because when you live your life that way, when you meet those trials, the way you respond to things is hardwired into your brain because you know that you respond to things the way that Christ would. This is the secret to having contentment in every situation. The markers by which you live your life must point back to the Lord. When you set up your brain structure that way to think back and rely on the Lord, you will be able to find contentment in those things. When you anchor your hope and your joy in the Lord, nothing and no one can take that away from you. Now, you can give that away, right? You can give away the peace of God. You can give that up. And I have many, many times where I get back in this rat race of trying to have things and do things, and then I'm not content, right? But an external circumstance, another person can't take that contentment away from you if it's rooted in Jesus Christ, right? That's what we need to do. Don't root it in these frail things that we have here that can be taken away. Your health and your wealth and your freedom, they can all be removed. But your relationship with Jesus Christ, that can't be taken away. And so we think about contentment in our American context, we think about it in the wrong way. We think about, I'm content with what I have, right? The Wikipedia definition of, I'm content in the circumstance that I find myself in. Well, in the Bible, it says, your contentment has to be found in Christ. That way the situation doesn't matter. If the contentment is in Christ, it doesn't matter what goes on around you in your life. So Paul goes on in verse 13. This is a pretty common passage where he says, I can do all things through Christ which strengthens me. And this is one of those passages that I think often gets taken out of context in our modern, you know, kind of woo-woo Christian culture. You know, oh, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Well, let's get real here. I don't really think that means that we can do all things through Christ, right? Aubrey is in gymnastics right now, okay? And she does splits and cartwheels and backflips and all this stuff. I have watched her, and this old guy right here is almost 40, right? I can't do those things, right? So I can't do all things anymore, okay? So sometimes we think we can do all things. No, we can't do all things, okay? What Paul is trying to say here is he's saying that you can learn, right? You can learn something through this practice, but you can learn from me, but you have, you know, Paul talked about before where you can watch me, you can follow the way that I live. And he's saying you can watch me, but you're not watching me, you're actually watching Christ. He's saying this is Christ. So he's saying you can do all things. You can find contentment like I did through Christ, but it's through following Christ that you can find these things. Notice how anytime Paul may sound proud, right, he turns all of that back to Jesus Christ to make sure that he doesn't get pride in his heart. We need to implement this idea in our lives as well. What did Paul say here? You know, he says, you know, I can make it on a lot. He says, I can make it on a little. I'm always content, right? I can do that. But it may sound like he's starting to toot his own horn. Like, I have found the secret to do this on my own. But he immediately follows that up then with verse 13 to make sure that anyone that's reading this letter knows he's not saying I'm good enough to do these things. I'm not good enough to be content on my own will and my own well-doing. That's why Paul says that in verse 13, he goes on to say, that's why he says that. He says, I can do all things through Christ, right? Through the strength of Christ. That's how I can do those things. So Paul always kind of, when he says something that sounds good about himself, he always says, but that's only because of God, right? And when we live our lives that way, we're going to find more contentment. When you say, oh, I did something really good, but I can only do that good thing because of God, right? When we start to live our lives that way, we're going to find much more contentment. So we've always, notice, when did Paul say, I can make it on a lot, I can make it on a little? I'm always content, right? He's always in a spot of contentment because he's learned to hand that back to God. So Paul is saying, I have been there through all of this. I've been through the ups and the downs, the good and the bad. He's been through persecution. He's been through praise. I can only do these things through Christ because he gives me the strength to do them. So when Christ's strength is your baseline, you build your life from there, right? That's what you want to do. And then, yes, if you do that, you can do all things. You can face adversity. You can face challenges. You will often hear, when you're out and about in the world, you will often hear people say things like this. You'll hear, I could never do that, right? I could never handle that situation that you handled. Whatever it is, you know, I could never do that. Well, you're right, right? They're right. You can't do that. But through Christ, you can. Okay, so you have to lean on him in good times and develop that relationship out, right? During those times of plenty, you have to develop that relationship. Then, when impossible situations arise, and they will, people will look at you and they'll say, how on earth are you walking through that trial with so much grace? And your answer will be very much like Paul. You're going to say, I can do all things through Christ who gives me the strength, right? I don't have the strength to walk through this trial. I don't have the strength to get through this, but if I rely on Christ, then I do have the strength to get through that thing. And that's why you'll see these older Christians, and they're so stable, right? Remember that steadfastness, that stability? Because they have learned that they rely on Christ, that they can get through these trials that most of us would be unimaginable, right? So this is how true spiritual contentment is built, okay? You have to live life through times of plenty to learn. As we studied here this morning, you create that habit of learning and relying on the Lord. And when you do that, see, you aren't relying on your health and your wealth and your freedom. Then when adversity comes, when the problems arise, you can endure through the tough times by doing what you learned, right? The things that you had put into your heart earlier on. The leaning on the Lord, you relied on the Lord. After the character trait is built, you realize that it doesn't really matter whether you have plenty or whether you're without. That's where this comes from. It's not circumstance dependent. You can rejoice in the Lord, and that is when the heart is truly content. that being said, contentment isn't all about external factors, right? When we think about this idea of contentment, it's not about the external things that life throws at you. Contentment doesn't mean that you sit and seemingly disconnect from a situation. You know, sometimes you kind of, I feel like that sometimes in Christian circles, you're like, well, I'm supposed to be content in all situations, so I'm just going to kind of sit down, hunker down, put my head down, and deal with this. Well, that's not really contentment, right? That's not contentment at all. In fact, I think that you should use your God-given talents and refine those talents and hone them in and build them up. And I think you should create, and you should have desires and goals and visions and dreams and try to do things. And I think you should create a wonderful life, and that you should use those skills and those talents and do great things and do brilliant things and make a great and wonderful life for yourself. In fact, create a legacy, right, that says that we in this family, we love Jesus, right? In this family, we do that, and we do more, and we create more so that we can do more to impact the kingdom of God. And so contentment isn't about not wanting more things and being bold and being courageous and getting out there and doing things. And I think sometimes we think contentment means we need to just stop where we're at. Well, that's not what we're saying. Your contentment, you're allowed to have drive. You're allowed to have visions. You're allowed to have goals. You know, but we want to make sure that those things aren't what you're basing your identity on. You want to base your identity back on Christ and rely on Him. So that's kind of where we get that, where I will often waver in my contentment, is which side of that line I'm on, where I find my contentment at. So, but Paul was locked up in a prison cell when he was writing this letter, and he did not stop growing, right? He did not stop striving for the cause of Christ. So contentment isn't about giving up and sitting back. Contentment is okay to drive and have goals, but I don't think that Paul was saying, well, I give up, I'm sitting in prison, right? But he was content in the situation that he was in. So no matter where you find yourself right now, if you're sitting here this morning, with this idea of contentment, remember the formula for contentment is found in the verses leading up to that famous passage in chapter 4, verse 11, where Paul says he learned to be content. So the recipe for contentment, surprise, surprise, is the condition of the heart. That's what it comes down to. What is the condition of your heart this morning? Are you anxious about your situation, or are you striving for things that are outside the will of God? For false, fleeting sense of peace, right? We try to find this false sense of peace and this false sense of contentment, but it can be shattered in a moment, right? So what we need to do is, are you, like we studied earlier, are you rejoicing in the Lord always? When you're discontent, when you start to feel like, say to yourself, am I rejoicing in the Lord always? And then ask yourself, am I being reasonable? Is my reasonableness known to everyone? Right? If I'm flying off the handle and I'm being mad and anxious and worked up about things, then I don't have contentment. So am I relying on God? Am I being reasonable? And then, are you, through prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, making your requests made known to God? Meaning, are you telling God, God, I'm in this situation. I'm feeling discontented. I'm in this situation. I'm trying to rely on you. I'm trying to remain calm. I'm trying to remain steadfast. And I'm going to bring these things to you. When you start to do that and you bring that back to Jesus, you're going to start to feel that contentment come back. And finally, are you watching those things that are true and honest and just and pure and lovely? Are you doing those things, right? You can't be living a life throughout the week where you're putting all kinds of nonsense and all kinds of bad things in your brain, and then you're saying, why am I so discontent? Why am I so anxious? Why am I so worked up? Well, because the things that you're feeding into your brain are causing discontentment, okay? And like I said, you want goals. We have careers. We have dreams. We want to do things for our family, and that's all good if we keep those things in check with the idea that Christ comes first. And when you can get to that point, that is what creates the true, incorruptible contentment. Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, I just thank you for this morning, Lord. I just thank you for this message that you've laid on me this morning. As I think about contentment, Lord, I think you gave me this message in the week that I had to teach me, to make me go through that process, Lord, and I thank you for that real life example, and I pray that as each one here, you know, works through this idea of contentment in their own lives, Lord, that they may use these things that we learned here this morning, and that they may use that to develop out a contentment in you, Lord, that flourish in